The Diesel Podcast.
Digital integration in English as a second or other language.
Episode 13, Engaging Students Online.
Hello and welcome to Diesel, episode number 13. We are your hosts. I am Brent Warner.
And I'm Ishelle Reyes.
And Ishelle, we are we're at it again.
Week three and two, or week four. I don't know what day it is anymore.
Nobody even knows if there is such thing as a Sunday. So here we go. So one of the things, Ishelle, that we've been talking about, and especially with you, is... we both have been working hard to get our teachers online and kind of working for everything and get our students online and all of those types of things. One of the nice things for me, although I didn't feel it at the time, but now as we're kind of settling in, I feel it a little bit more, is that our school is pretty well prepared with an infrastructure in place. We already had online learning systems. We had Zoom for all of our teachers. We had an LMS. We had, all of these types of things, which, when you have things in place, then you just need to learn to activate them, right?
Right.
Your setup is a little bit different, and I'm not sure how much you want to reveal about that.
Well, the thing is, we know that not every school really knew when we are going to be shifting to online, and maybe not everybody knew that they were going to be having to teach from home. And so what happened is a lot of us had to suddenly, well, not quite suddenly, but within a very short period of times, just days, to try to get all of our equipment logged, checked out, and the programs we needed installed or not installed if they weren't permitted to be installed on our devices. We had to get all that ready and just take it home and sort of like, okay, now we have to teach. And so I'm finding out that, obviously, because I love tech and I love tools, I could come up with my bag of tricks, right? Or things that have worked in the past for me. But a lot of our instructors, and as I'm looking through Twitter at other people's experiences, we are going through that, the different stages of learning how to emergency remote teach, right? And so, and temporary, because this is not like a true, we've talked about it in previous episodes, this is not true online teaching, right? This is not a true online class. This is emergency temporary remote teaching.
Correct, right. And we know that people are super interested in this. The last episode with Denise, episode 12, is blown up for us, at least for our little show. It's quickly become the most popular episode, and for good reason. I think that a lot of TESOL teachers are not really getting the all the support that they need. I think some of the things that are coming out there, it's like people are piecemealing together little things, but they don't really have a lot of heavy expertise in the area. You and I happen to, because of, everything we've been doing over the last 10 years. Yeah, we're nerds on this type of thing. But there really aren't, this show, we talk about this too, is like, we're still the only EdTech and ESL show that I know of. People are like, just now are starting to realize, okay, we need to start getting these ideas together, right? And that's fine. It's great. We need to support all of that. But it's also a lot of work, and it's tricky, right? It takes a different mindset and a different understanding.
Right. And Brent, you and I have talked about before, like the reason why this podcast exists is to be able to reach out to other instructors that maybe don't necessarily have the support where they are at, or because, in ESL, especially when you get into, in K through 12, you tend to have a little bit more structure in the support there. The support is still lacking. But once you get into higher ed, adult learning, and all of the, English for specific purposes, the support is harder to find. So I know one of the issues that you and I talk about all the time, prior to COVID-19 is that the longer people wait to make that familiar, to make themselves familiarized with tech and tools that are out there, the bigger that gap grows between them and being able to use that tech.
Right.
And the longer they wait, once they have to make that jump, you know, to bridge the gap, that jump gets, you know, it becomes such a difficult, scary task. And we are seeing it now because people are being forced to make that jump and bridge that gap.
Big time.
And so,
yeah.
Or fall through, right?
Well, let's hope not. Let's hope that they don't fall through.
Right.
We're trying to catch you.
And that's over here.
Yeah, that's over here. We're the safety net, right?
you shall not pass.
So one thing that we want to, focus on, a lot of the teachers out there are like, well, okay, now that I'm starting to get online, I'm starting to do these things, or, you know, even if I'm doing, you know, you talked about like telecommuting into classes and whatever it takes, right? Mm-hmm. But one of the things that a lot of teachers are stressing out is like, well, how do I know that they're engaged now, right? How do I mm-hmm. know that I'm actually capturing their attention? I don't have my, mm-hmm. I've spent years building this repertoire of ideas and understanding and ways to check in. And now all of those are stripped away because they were kind mm-hmm. of right in front of me. And so mm-hmm. We thought that today it might be a good opportunity to talk about engaging students online.
Sure. So, as we're teaching, one of the things that we're probably all noticing is that now instead of that face-to-face time, you're spending a lot more time in front of that screen, right? You're still seeing, maybe if you're lucky, your students have a computer or a device with a camera, you can see their faces. In some cases, maybe your students don't have a device with a camera, but now you have to deal with attention span with a different medium, which is a screen. A lot of that screen time also, we know that affects the way that the way that your brain works. You get tired a lot more. There's a lot less physical movement than normally you would have in the actual physical real classroom. And there's a lot more reliance on audio cues, which for language learners, you already have the language barrier. Now you're adding the tech barrier, but now you're asking your students to constantly be listening. And I find that's exhausting. Brent, have you found that's the case?
Yeah, it's been tricky. I mean, I've definitely been feeling more tired at the end of the day, but I think also my students. And so I am very fortunate in that my students are pretty with it and ready to be online. Mm-hmm. Most of the times I realize that the teachers are way less prepared than the students. The students are like, all right, let's go for it. Let's do it. And the teachers are like, whoa, hold on a second. I need to rethink all of this stuff. Right. And so, yeah, mm-hmm. a lot of these little things, like how to check for understanding. Like you said, we might look for the nods, but if the student mm-hmm. has a screen off, that then we don't see their nod. Right. Or mm-hmm. If we're using Zoom, then we might say, we might have to train them now. Okay. Give me the green check mark or the thumbs up if you're mm-hmm. comfortable with this, or you know, whatever it is. And
yeah.
And these are little tricks, but one of the things that we were talking about is like we need to kind of have an understanding of what's going to work here, the new and or different ways to approach the class.
Right. And I think, you know, you bring up a good point, because I had, right now, the class that I have, none of my students have camera access. So I have nothing but their voice or chat messages to rely on mm. for to check for understanding. And that throws something, you know, that throws another curveball, because now I'm going to have to make sure that my shy students or my ones that are maybe a little, take a little more time understanding, I have to make sure that I'm reaching them as well. So this is a timely episode.
By the way, Michelle, props to you for that, because I don't know what I would do if I couldn't. Like, I mean, that really is a lot more work, right? Like, just not being able to see.
And it's a lot of thinking on your feet. And here's one of the things that you said, that we need to learn how to weave these into our teaching and understand that this is a different conceptualization of how we're presenting that material. And I found that this week that I did it, I was exhausted, mentally exhausted, because I was making all these on my feet decisions about what that next task was going to look like and how I was going to execute it and how I was going to try to collect some data, because I'm not just going to pop a YouTube video and say, here, go watch this, because, you know, that's just busy work, right? That's saving me for a little bit of thinking time. But I actually do want to, you know, as an instructor who prides herself on teaching well, I really want to know at the end of the day that what I did had some kind of meaning, even if we didn't do or accomplish what we normally would in a regular classroom, because obviously that wouldn't be realistic. I still want to feel good with what I presented for my students. This brings us to Sharon Bowman, who wrote The Six Trumps, The Brain Science That Makes Training Stick. In this article, she writes, "The human brain learns best when content is divided into smaller chunks or segments of information." Patricia Wolf illustrates this principle with the example of phone numbers. Phone numbers are not remembered as a list of 10 numbers, but as two chunks of three numbers and one chunk of four. Grouping facts into larger categories or major concepts is another way of chunking. So is dividing content delivery into shorter segments of time, about 10 or 20 minutes rather than 60 or 90 minutes. John Medina describes this process thus. The way to make long-term memory more reliable is to incorporate new information gradually and repeat it in timed intervals. And this, ladies and gentlemen, was from 2008.
Yeah. So this is an older idea. Great ideas. And actually, Bowman ended up putting a book out on this, and there's it kind of goes in longer. But you know, this idea about shrinking down your content and kind of, let's just talk about this in smaller chunks. I don't think that's a brand new idea for a lot of us, but it tends to get easier in our classes to go, okay, we're going to do a 60-minute segment, and then we're going to take a break, and then we're going to do a 60-minute segment, right? And so how can we set up our courses to have a 10 or 15 or 20-minute segment, and then a break, and then a 10 or 15 or 20-minute segment, right? So of course, we'll have a link to that article. There's actually quite a few good ideas inside of there. And then, Ishelle, as we were looking at this, I was reminded of a book that I had read back when we were both together at USC, which was Make It Stick. Make It Stick, The Science of Successful Learning. And that's by Brown and Roger and McDaniel, I think. So you can go find that on Amazon. It's a pretty popular book. But one of the concepts inside of there was interleaving. And interleaving is this idea of bringing one idea in, teaching it, right? So teaching the you know, concept A, right? And then when you go to concept B, you also weave back concept A into concept B so that you don't lose A, right? So you don't just want to only talk about A, then only talk about B, and then only talk about C, right? So it's like you do A, and then you do B with some A. And then you do C with some B and a little bit of A, right? And then you do D with some C and a little bit of B and maybe a tiny bit of A. And so you're always weaving back in, and you're so this is this idea that they're calling interleaving, where you never let the ideas go. You have to show a way to bring it back into your work, right? So they did all this research on it and how it helps us learn. You guys have seen this before. If you've ever done like online flashcards, or if you've ever done an app that does flashcards, that's how they work. The algorithm inside of them, if you get the answers wrong, it brings it back more regularly. If you get it right, it brings it back less often, but it does bring it back. And so it's kind of at the timing where your brain forgets and or is about to forget, and then it's like a little nudge reminder that says, oh yeah, wait a second, I know this thing, or we had learned this thing. And so so if you can work on interleaving, and this is much more possible online because you can see specifically, you have it all laid out, and you go, oh, okay, let's bring back an idea from this and then bring back an idea from that, and so forth and so on.
Gosh, This is awesome. I'm blown away by all of these, you know, things from the past that are just so relevant now.
Yeah, I know, right?
And relevant just in you know, our regular classes too, not just now.
Yeah, but yeah. Well, and that's the big thing too. We always want to think about this is like, we talk about this in terms of technology, mm-hmm. but like, it's just good practices, right?
Mm-hmm, so, right. It is. That's what it is.
But it is hard to always integrate good practices or the things you're like, oh, that's great. That works really well. And then you kind of settle into ways that don't necessarily follow them sometimes or whatever it is, right? I mean, we're human and, you know, sometimes it's not the easiest to prep every single setup. And so I think it's a good reminder. It's definitely a good reminder for me. It's like, oh, wait a second. Now that I'm shifting these things, am I considering this when I'm building out my course, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So it's something that I want to pay attention to. And I think we have a couple of ideas, Ishel, on how we can make this work. Okay, so before we move forward, we have a new review, Ishel. That's pretty nice. So of course, mm-hmm. that is the pin winner, and we're always excited when someone leaves us a review. And so today's review we have from someone named Simone, I think. It's SI-MO-NE. So I'm going to assume that's Simone. And it says, check this out. This is a great podcast for ESOL educators. The most recent episode about teaching online was really timely and helpful. I'm looking forward to doing a deep dive into past episodes. So that's a very recent review for us. And mm-hmm. thank you, Simone, for that. So if you send us a message letting us know that you left that, then we will happily send one of the kind diesel pins along to you.
Okay, so Brent, you and I have come up with some tools and techniques to engage our students while we're teaching them online.
Right. And we've been thinking about this. So I know that you've been introducing a lot to your teachers, and I've been trying not to overwhelm my own teachers. I'm like, do this and this and
right.
this. Like, trying not to go too crazy with things. But I think using the ideas that we were talking about before and then kind of integrating that into the class, some of these things might be useful for people listening, we hope, mm-hmm. of course. And so one of the things that's important when you're moving online is to provide information in multiple formats. Now, we don't need to worry about like the whole thing of like, oh, I learn in multiple modalities. I'm an auditory learner, whatever. Like, we actually from the previous book, we know that there's no empirical evidence that shows that that is an actual thing. But at the same time, providing different mediums of instruction and mediums formats for people to consume and to work with allows them to shift and to change. And so you might use something like video at one point and then writing at another point and audio. And so you want to kind of have different ways for them to do it just for them to refresh and to process in a new way, right?
Mm-hmm. And so some of the tools, as you said, you don't want to overwhelm yourself with these. So anything that we mention, choose one, try one if you like it. Try it again, do it better the next time. And then if you didn't like it, try a new one, but give yourself some time. Just as we give our students time to process information, you also need that time. So I've used, these are all oldies but goodies, to be honest. I've used for audio, Vocaroo, and that's vocaroo.com. Vocaroo with two O's at the end. Our links will be on our show notes. And Vocaroo allows, it's a web tool that allows students to record a file. It stores it in the Vocaroo magical bank of audio. And then you simply copy that link into your Zoom chat box or whatever platform you're using it, and you can listen to that. So you can do this for vocabulary practice if you're having students pronounce vocabulary. If you're having students read a paragraph out loud, something that they've written, you can give them time to do that. And you'll find that students will want to be perfect. So they'll re-record and re-record and re-record. And so then you'll actually be building that practice time already into the lesson by using something like that. Also Answer Garden, if you have not used this, this is a tool, Brent, that I learned from you in 2014 at a Catisal workshop that I attended before we were friends.
Oh, I almost forgot about that. Okay. Yeah. Great.
I know. So Answer Garden is your basic, again, it's a web tool. And I think they have an app for iPads now. So if you're on an iPad, you can use it. It's a link. You create a question. It could be a multiple choice question, or it can be something where it's an open-ended question and you want students to enter in a single word or a phrase. And so you might ask the question, for example, this is what I asked. What do you think when I say the word hero? And so students were supposed to generate as many words, adjectives or nouns. And then that would create a word bubble, a word cluster. And so with the most popular terms being bigger. So that was kind of cool. And students could in real time see their own contributions. And then when I changed the question, because this is live, I could say, okay, now what do you think is more important for you? Type that word. And you could see the words changing, like from size, because now a different word was popping up more often. Google Docs. I cannot thank Google Docs enough this week for saving my butt. because all I had to create was, none of my students have Gmail accounts, but I could create a link that was just accessible by anyone with the link. And I could hear my students. So I could call on them and I could guide them on how to use a doc. And so I showed them, basically I had to spend time showing them how to use a doc, how it works. But these are students that are emerging in their language and their English language ability. And so the fact that I could do this through Google Docs simply by guiding them and giving them some time and time to play around, because this is a new tool and you're going to have fun, just like you would with kindergartners and you present a box of Legos. What are they going to do? The first thing is play with them, throw them around a little bit. And then actually you're going to say, okay, we're going to count by tens and then you can guide them. Right. So you have to give them some time to play with that.
So Sheldon, you're saying that basically you're listening to people on the phone, right? And that, or you're talking and listening, but then at the same time, they're logged into a shared open Google Doc and you're seeing them typing and writing while you're talking to them. That is a great way to do it. I mean, if you're stuck in that situation, right, that's perfect, right? You can jump in, see exactly what they're writing, guide them along. They might play around a little bit, but mm-hmm. what an excellent and free solution.
That, exactly. And all you need is the teacher to have an account. And there you go. And I'm sure that there may be other platforms that are not Google Docs that also have that shared doc shared doc option. And then during the break, so I have to now have a different concept of what my class, like one class hour actually looks like in reality, right? In reality, I'm not going from minute to minute. I'm giving some time in between because students are now having to navigate the barrier of tech. Because if my students have never actually learned to type on a computer, now that's another thing they have to figure out. Typing in English is hard. If you're coming from a country where your language is written from right to left, now that presents another issue, right? Another barrier. But I like to display images by sharing them, doing a screen share. And that might be an image to remind them of the break. It might be to remind them of the assignment, especially for those who might not write it down. Or also, you do need a visual reminder, right? You, when you're doing workshops and you give a break, you put up a slide that says break, or you have the agenda already, right? And I make those with Adobe Spark, which is free. And that brings us to how to make your class a little bit more fun. And that is you, your turn.
So we were thinking about a little bit of things to do to make things fun, right? Ways to engage people, maybe even when you're not the one going, right? And so, Ishelle, you had mentioned that you might make some kind of fun graphics out of Adobe Spark. You could do things like with Bitmojis, right? And you could combine those. So if you use a Bitmoji and you have a character of yourself mm-hmm. and a cartoon of yourself, again, it's just a little different way to kind of show people that you're there and remind them that mm-hmm. you're there. And you could do a couple of other things too. So definitely some chances to do that. I also had come up with this these break timers. So this is something that I had done for a while in the past, but if you are taking a break, you know, you can just say, okay, we're going to come back in 10 minutes or whatever it is. But if you plan ahead, you can actually make a break timer that has some purpose, because some of your students are not going to walk away from the screen. So in our case, we're doing like these Zoom classes, and they're just going to sit there and go, well, okay, 10 minutes, what am I supposed to do? And they might just jump off and kind of, you know, start surfing the internet or whatever it is. So one thing to do to kind of keep their brain on the class, if they want to, again, if they can't take a break, but you can make in Google Slides, you can make a timer. So you can make 10 different slides, and you can set the timer on the slide so it automatically moves forward every minute, right? So then what you do is you can make a different slide for every minute. So what I did here, Ishel, is I made a slide that's like a grammar test, right? Self-run grammar quiz for the students. So it's one question, 1 minute, and then the answer comes up the next minute. So it might be, you know, just a multiple choice, totally for fun, very low stakes, but they can read the question, they can think about it, and then the next minute, then the answer would come up, right? And then they can read the next question, read the next answer. So they would get 5 questions and 5 answers inside of the 10 minutes. And for the students that are wanting to stay, then they have something to kind of pay attention to and to think about. They could even kind of challenge themselves by typing the answer into the chat box while they're doing it, or while they're looking at that stuff. And so, again, it's low stakes, but this would also be a good opportunity to do that interleaving. So it's like, oh, we talked about this last week. This is the grammar we were talking about last week. Oh, do I remember this, right? And so they could re-challenge themselves during those times. I also came up with another one, kind of based on the New York Times. The New York Times, they have this, what do you think's happening in this picture, or something like that. And so I actually went to that that New York Times thing and took a bunch of their pictures, and then I made my own timer based on that. So I have a picture, and the picture stays up for 2 minutes. And then what the students can do is they can look at it and they can write a sentence or 2 sentences or 3 sentences in the chat box about what do you think is happening in this picture, right? And so they're pretty funky pictures. There's like, you know, like the first one is like a sheep on a catwalk, right? And there's all these people taking pictures of the sheep, right? And then there's one of like these guys jumping off of a super crazy high dive, and like 6 of them jumping all at the same time, and all these different pictures. And you can go choose your own. But I will say, I've made this and I'm putting it up on the show notes. And so anyone can take this and you can use it if you're taking a 10-minute break with your class. You can use it to run in the background while you go off, and some of your students might stay and kind of use it as part of their downtime. And so it's a great way to kind of let students see that, hey, there's still stuff going on. I can still interact with this if I want to, even though the teachers maybe walked away.
That is genius, Brent. When I saw these guys, when I saw these slides, I thought, oh my gosh, this is so cool. That means you can take your break, because in my situation, I have a co-teacher, right? So during her break, or during I would pop an image in and I would answer student questions. And you're right, a lot of the students are not going to be getting up to take that 10-minute walk, because they're no longer going to go outside to meet their friends, right?
Right.
So they're still learning there. If you pop something in there, and it's just kind of a brain break, right? So thank you for making those available for us.
Yeah. So if anybody wants them, they're at diesel.org/13, the number 13, for the show notes in this episode. You'll be able to get them. And I'll also set it up so you can make a copy for yourself. And then of course, change it to whatever suits your class, right?
So, that's cool, Brent, because this is another way where you can be teaching something like idioms. Or you could have riddles. We did riddles in my class as a intro or during a break. But then students over the course of the week, they would say, "Teacher, what's the riddle? Teacher, I have a riddle." And it's like, well, you see, they are paying attention. They find it meaningful, and now they're incorporating themselves into part of that, building that activity, and they're having now that conversation that we are embedding that opportunity for them to participate. So that is pretty awesome.
Love it. Okay, so a couple other things that you can keep doing. One thing that I was thinking about, Ishel, and tell me, we have not bounced this idea off of each other yet, but you can tell me if I'm crazy. One of the things we need to learn is like making things active, right? We know that we don't want students just sitting in a chair, flattening their butts all day long, right? We want them moving, but our classes now are in front of a computer. So one of the things that I was thinking is like, okay, you don't have to have students just sitting in front of the computer the whole time watching you talk all day, right? Mm-hmm. And so I started thinking, well, what are some ways that we can get students to use English around the house? Now, a common classroom activity that we might do is like, tell us about a food, or, you know, at a lower level, you say, tell us about a food that from your country and why it's popular, or maybe even like write out the directions on how to make it, right? But here's what I had thought of. What if we did a Flipgrid where we ask students to actually cook the dish on their Flipgrid, and they have to cut out and edit the timing so that it fits into like 3 minutes or 5 minutes or something like that, right? So they can't take the whole time and just let it run. They have to show us the entire cooking process in English, but it has to be edited down to get into 5 minutes. That was thinking like, and then at the end of it, they have to present the food and show what it actually looks like. That's part
that
one.
Is okay. Can I comment?
I mean, do you think that works?
I think that's awesome, because like the class I had before the current class I have, they were all students that were quarantined in their individual homes or dorms. So during our lunch break, they would all send each other without prompting a picture of what they were going to eat. And so it's like, okay, well, what a great thing to have them do, like maybe a picture. And you could, if this sounds like a very difficult thing for your students, you could set it to like, picture of the ingredients,
right?
A picture of the next thing, and then the picture of the final product. And then you fill in the blanks by recording, right?
Right, right.
That could, I don't know if that's what I'm envisioning right now.
You can do
right
whatever
now.
You want, right? I mean, this is just the loose idea, right? So my second part to this then was for students' responses, I want them to make it their classmates' dish at their house.
Ah, so cook this instead of...
Yeah. So they, so like, hey,
that's cool.
Hey, you made the dish, right? So, or like I make the dish, right? And I teach you in the 5 minutes, I go, here's how I do it. Right. And then I actually follow those directions and I cook that dish at my house, and then,
report.
And then I report back on like how I like it and what it looks like. And did I do a good job or not? Right. And so that then is a real opportunity for people to have that cultural sharing between each other. We do. So it's one of the great things about working in our field is like all these awesome foods and all these things. And so we go, well, now we have the opportunity to, okay, this is my assignment, is to make a food dish from someone else's country. Right. And then I'm going to report on it and show what I ended up coming up with or what it looks like for me.
You know what I'm thinking of right now? I'm thinking of Kate Tolnai. We did an episode with her a couple months ago. She would probably say, that is power up learning.
Yeah. I think that this, and so again, it's just things like this, right? So you have an opportunity to take the learning away from sitting in front of the screen and doing something, even though we're still stuck at home or whatever is going on, we can still have these ways. And by the way, this would still work after the quarantine's over, right?
Yeah.
There's no reason not to be able to do it in any situation.
And Brent, here's another thing that we need to point out is this takes really very little preparation from the teacher.
This is completely
the students doing the work. So there's no actual planning other than come up with the parameters of the activity, right? So that your students have that. Awesome. I love it.
So, Ishel, I think for now we've got a fair amount of things that can help people and get started with some engagement. Remember, we're trying to think of like ways to make sure that our students are paying attention, that they're actually doing the work, that it's not too hard for them. Anything else that you want to add for right now?
I think this is a good starting point. And you guys all know how to reach us on if you have ideas, actually send us your ideas, tweet at us, you know, comment on the social media platforms, because there's just so much, you know, a lot of this I've learned from my peers on Twitter. I mean, I met you on Twitter.
Our Flipgrid is still open too. So if you go to flipgrid.com/diesel, you should, you can jump in, drop in some ideas on ways to make the up the engagement too for your classes.
Yes. Okay, it is time for our fun finds. And today I have, you know, it's kind of hard to come up with one because we're all stuck at home, but I did find a really cool, helpful one. This is the website instock.org. It's instok.org. It's a web tool. And this was developed by two high schoolers in Dallas, which is so awesome. It's a web tool to find which store near you is likely to have to be stocked for an item. So, you know, all of us are searching for toilet paper and all sorts of other necessity items. And I couldn't find at my local store, but sure enough, as soon as I typed my zip code, it showed me which ones were more likely to be in stock. And they use, I think they pull their data from the company's daily like stock reports. Like, I mean, the actual item stock reports. So again, it's something to try out there, especially if you only tend to go to one or two stores in your neighborhood.
Cool. In stock. So yeah, if you don't know, if you're looking for particular things, I'm looking for flour. Mm-hmm. I have not found flour since all of this started.
Really?
So, yeah, I don't know.
Interesting.
Okay. So mine is Drawful 2. Have you heard of this game, Michelle?
No.
Okay. So it's made by those guys who it's Jackbox Games. Like I think they do the You Don't Know Jack and all those things, right? Yeah. So anyways, this game is kind of a Pictionary / draw with friends combination. And what they do is you have to have like 3 to 8 people, I think. And then, but it's great for when you're jumping online. Now we're chatting with our friends more often via online, right? And so, so again, you can create an account, and it's pretty straightforward. And then you give out a code to everybody and they all get the code. Mm-hmm. Then it gives a weird writing or drawing prompt to each person. Mm-hmm. And it's a different prompt for each person. So one person's might be bromance and the other person's might be like, you know, sexy giraffe. And the last one might be something magical. Right. And so it's like, they're unclear ideas about what they are. But then, so you try to draw it and everybody draws it on their own phone or their tablet. And then it shows up with all of the, then you see the picture, you see the picture of each person and you write what you think it is. And then you vote on what those, you vote on the different possible ideas of names, right?
Okay, so I've played something like this before. And I mean, but it was an actual like video game on your smart TV. But this is a great way to have fun while we can't, you know,
Yeah.
Social distancing.
And so
physical distancing.
The reason that I bring it up is that right now it happens to be free on a lot of the platforms.
Oh, cool.
So it's like free on Steam. It's free to download to your Mac. It's free on, I think, Nintendo Switch and a bunch of different things. So
cool.
So instead of paying the $10 that you would normally pay, you can get it for free. And then you just invite your friends with the code. And by the way, there are some adulty kind of themes, but there's a button you can click to say like make it family friendly. So if you want to play with your family too, they're like a little bit more generalized ideas. Mm-hmm. So so it's called Drawful, Drawful. Number 2, this is the second one. I hadn't heard of it before, but it seems like it's pretty fun.
Cool.
Thanks so much for listening to the show. If you want to get a one-of-a-kind diesel pin, please let us know what you've got. Send us a review, you guys. As always, we're just chasing the reviews one at a time, right? So they're coming in, we're leaving it, and we're sending off the pin. So go ahead and leave us a review.
Yeah. For more on this episode, you can find us at diesel.org.
And you can find us on Twitter. You can find the show at dieselpod, DIESOLPOD. And you can find me at Brent G. Warner.
And I'm Michelle at @ixy_pixy. That's IXY_PIXY. In Polar, a language of Guinea, thank you is Ondiarama. On Diarama for tuning in to the Diesel Podcast.
All right. Thanks, everybody. Goodbye.
Bye.